Daily Drive is brought to you by Reynolds & Reynolds. Want to know how dealerships like yours saw increased profit performance dealership-wide? Visit reyrey.com/KPI to read the Impact on Profitability study. That's reyrey.com/KPI.
Welcome to Daily Drive. I'm Steve Smith with Automotive News. It's Friday, September 11th. Flying cars. The idea really isn't that new. They've been the stuff of dreams, movies, and futuristic cartoons for centuries. Some of Leonardo da Vinci's sketches are said to be early drawings of what today we refer to as drones. For some, the credit for the first real flying car can be attributed to Glenn Curtis in his 1917 Curtis Autoplane. For Patrick Hessel, CEO of Aero Mobile, flying cars are not the stuff of dreams and science fiction. They are indeed real. And this month, the company is looking forward to achieving some major milestones in the development of the 4.0 version of its fixed-wing, short-runway takeoff and landing vehicle. It's been a 5-year journey to get to what's planned this month, and the company has made advancements in safety, technology, and other aspects of the vehicle while also navigating complex air and ground-based transportation regulation. The company is focused on low-volume manufacturing, planning for about 100 units of the 4.0 vehicle that appeal to the affluent supercar buyer. And while the company has no plans to enter the B2B shared air mobility segment, Aero Mobile investor and company advisor Mir Anan sees a lot of interest and innovation in a growing ecosystem of companies working on low-altitude personal air mobility. What's the latest on flying car technology? What lessons have Patrick and Mir learned, and what advice would they offer others driving innovation in mobility? We've reached Patrick at his office in Slovakia and Mir at his office in Israel. Patrick and Mir, thank you for joining me today on Daily Drive. How are you both?
Excellent. Great for having us.
Very exciting conversation that we have for today on the topic of flying cars. I think an important place to start is level setting with our audience. When we say flying car, what does that actually mean? I think there are various visions of cars. Some, I think, naturally gravitate towards passenger drones. That's not what we're talking about today. So, Patrick, if you could give us our listeners a little bit of level setting. When you say flying cars, what exactly does that mean?
Yeah, so I would say there's definitely flying cars are used in the general media in all sorts of ways. And I would distinguish really our type of vehicle, which is it's a vehicle that can actually drive on the road and can then convert into something that can fly. So that's what I would call a flying car, because it's actually able to drive on the road and hence car. But the general media uses the term also broadly for drones and passenger drones and air taxis, which I don't think is very correct, because it's actually not, these vehicles are not able to drive on the road, and they are pretty much an evolution, I would say, of the helicopter. And so I would really distinguish it like that, really.
So the Aero Mobile vehicle, it's a version 4.0 of vehicle, have had some milestones over, I even think this week, and I think you've got some milestones planned for next week as you continue to develop the product. Tell us a little bit about the maturity of the technology, some progress over the last several years, and share a little bit about these milestones that you and your team are enjoying now.
Yeah, so basically we started in 2010, and since then we had three previous models. The 4.0 is the fourth model, and the previous models all were tested, and two of them, the 2.5 and 3.0, were flying. The 3.0 flew in 2015. We had about 50 hours of flight, and basically we took a lot of the, you know, obviously lessons learned from that, and address them in our fundamental design of the 4.0. So it's been literally 5 years of a complete new development of the 4.0 of the vehicle. And now we got to a point where we have started the flight testing, and that's, you know, really exciting. I mean, because the vehicle is much improved to what all the previous vehicles in all sorts of areas, specifically flight stability, of course, safety, then also regulatory requirements that we now fulfill both in the automotive and aerospace side. The powertrain and the general power level was significantly increased, and also the design and aesthetics is really a lot improved, which is very important for the business side. So, yeah, the major milestones are really now that we're flying that vehicle, we're doing flight testing, and obviously there's a methodology to that. You start, step by step, but we're planning to do a full circle basically next week, but we've achieved tens of meters as of today.
That seems like a lot of innovation and a lot of progress, in 5 years, particularly on a vehicle as complex as one that, travels on the road as well as in the air. Mir, I want to ask you a question. This notion of innovation, rapid innovation, your roots are deep in Israel, and I think the story of innovation coming out of the startup nation is pretty understood by our listeners in the market. What attracted you to this technology and to Aero Mobile, and how are you seeing the innovation that's happening going on there when you compare it to other companies you're involved with?
Yes, so I always wanted a flying car since I was a child, I guess like most of the people I know. And I always wanted to fly. And meeting Aeromobile about 3 years ago brought me back to all these dreams. And I fell in love with the concept, with the people, the team. And, Israel is a global center for mobility technologies. This is where a lot of innovations are coming from. And I saw very easily the contribution I can bring, not only as an investor, but as well bringing new technologies, new concepts into the company, which I am busy doing with Aeromobile.
So let's talk about how the car actually works. Patrick, are we talking about a vehicle that if you're driving down the highway, will you press a button and you're suddenly flying? That seems interesting. So how does the vehicle actually work?
So, yeah, basically you have two modes. You have a car mode. So in the car mode, you drive pretty much like a normal car on the road. You have four wheels. And then you can convert it into the flight mode. So you have to stop. You press a button. The wings unfold automatically. They're stowed behind the driver, actually. You also unfold the propellers, and there's a couple of other transformation, like the rear bumper and some other things. And you do that while standing, not while driving. And then you need a small runway or a street to take off. Of course, it's not legal to take off from the highway or from a public road. But and as such, you need a small either airport or grass strip runway. Technically speaking, you could take off from the road. Of course, it's just a matter of the legality behind that. And you do your pre-flight visual check of the vehicle, like you would if you had a small aircraft. You walk around, do a visual check. But otherwise, then in that moment, you pretty much are sitting in an airplane, and you control it like a standard small airplane. It behaves like one, and also the regulation or all the rules that apply to you are the common rules for small airplanes. And you take off and you enjoy the world from above.
So you need a driver's license and a pilot's license.
That's right. I mean, for flying, you need a pilot's license. But if you don't have one, you can still own a vehicle. You can drive it around, do your transformation, and not fly and have somebody else fly. So we believe that people, there will be enough people who will not fly themselves, but they want to have and drive a flying car. That's possible indeed.
So I want to maybe go back to this definition of flying cars versus passenger drones, you see a difference between short takeoff and landing, which the Aeromobile 4.0 is, and vertical takeoff and landing. Even some differences with electrified vertical takeoff and landing. Can you talk to us a little bit about the benefits of STOL, short runway takeoff and landing, versus these other technologies?
Sure. I would say there's a major fundamental difference between them. And so if I talk about the STOL benefits and maybe drawbacks first. So first of all, you have infrastructure. So in our case, with a flying car, and I use that as a synonym to the STOL, you actually need you need a road, and you need a small airport or a runway, strip runway. And you have that readily available, so you don't need new infrastructure. In the VTOL area, you could use, obviously, heliports or airports, but the objective there is really to be transporting people mostly within cities or close by cities in bigger volumes. So I would say there's currently not the infrastructure available to transport and to have hundreds of VTOLs flying around, because a heliport may be big enough for five helicopters or something like that. So there's actually no existing infrastructure for that larger adoption of the VTOLs at the moment, and needs to be created. In terms of the technology, it's obviously quite different. I mean, in the STOL flying car, we're talking about merging the two worlds of automotive technology and a fixed wing general aviation technology into one, whereas on the VTOL side, we're talking about drones with multiple rotors for redundancy purposes, typically with electric propulsion, and with a vision also to use the vehicle in an autonomous mode in sometime in the future. I think that will still be a long time away, but obviously with the pilot in the meantime. So, obviously, from the physical point of view, a fixed-wing aircraft needs a lot less energy to take off versus anything that takes off vertically. So, in terms of range, you will always have a better, and actually significantly better range with the same, say, for the same energy consumption on a fixed-wing aircraft compared to a vertical takeoff and landing vehicle. Then about regulation, if we talk about regulation, our vehicle is designed in such a way that we can actually certify the vehicle as per the existing automotive and the existing aerospace regulatory standards. So we did not have to wait for any new regulation to come about, which actually is the case for the whole retail industry. So, that always brings, obviously, when you don't have regulation in place, it brings about additional risks, both of the timing and of the content of what will be allowed and not. So there's that element. And then in terms of the business side, I mean, we are really focused on the B2C market, because we are going to be a low volume, highly kind of a luxury vehicle. And we sell directly to end customers. So that's pretty straightforward. Of course, you need to find enough customers, but it's a straightforward process. Whereas in the VTOL space, obviously the VTOL is there targeted to solve the challenge of traffic jams and of thousands and tens of thousands of people moving about more effectively. And as a result, you need a complete, let's say, infrastructure and supply chain of different partners. So you need the OEMs to supply the vehicles. You need operators like an airline nowadays or an Uber who would adopt that and really provide the service to the end customer. And then you need still thousands of customers willing to travel this way every day. And you need, like in every, let's say, an airline business or other similar business, you need a high utilization, obviously, to make this work economically. So there's additional, kind of a whole infrastructure of of this business model needs that needs to be set up for it to operate operate well. So I would say these are the main differences, and also that, I mean, I would say all these points are basically in our advantage, because we, you know, both infrastructure, technology, and regulation, and also the business model is immediate. We don't need to wait for anything. And at the same time, the whole industry may be more limited in terms of volumes. We don't expect this to be a, you know, high volume type of industry ever. But within a low volume and focused and targeted niche market, we believe it's actually a much easier way to enter the personal aerial vehicle industry.
Let's talk about that direct-to-consumer, business-to-consumer model. Your target customers are private owners, wealthy, affluent, to your point, low volume, right? I think you had mentioned in an earlier conversation that, you know, around 100 units a year are planned of the 4.0 version of your vehicle. Any plans to do business-to-business fleet, those type of shared mobility business models? And if not, how do you see what you are doing being a stepping stone perhaps to a vision, regardless of the companies that deliver that, a stepping stone to shared air mobility?
Yeah, so we do not have in our two-seater flying car model the vision to have, you know, to offer this shared mobility. We pretty much very much in the segment of like the supercars and hypercars. That's how we view ourselves and position ourselves, because that industry, you know, is developing very, very well over the last 10 years. The vehicles are always limited editions, typically sold out very quickly, and also have a typically a price appreciation. And we really are a car that, you know, can drive but can also fly. So much we are an extension of the hypercar in that respect, because it's a different parameter that you're looking at, no longer the top speed, which actually you can never really utilize anyway, or the you know, having the fastest acceleration. It's just a number at the end. But from an experiential point of view, you know, flying in your car is a different experience. And now the other question you had, how do we see that as part of a grander vision? So I very much believe that that mankind has tried since 1917 to develop flying cars. There were many attempts. Then it moved into science fiction, from, you know, Back to the Future and Chitty Chitty Bang Bang and loads of movies, Fantomas, etc. But we really have the opportunity now to make this a reality. So there's a lot of history, a lot of storytelling around that. And also it's very important that the vehicle looks good, because at the end of the day, it's not just a purely functional product. It's also an aesthetic. It's a status symbol. It's also symbolic for, you know, this 100 year of failed development to make a commercially available and technically feasible product. And so around that achievement and being the first in that, you can actually build a strong brand and an aura, which stands for more than just the actual vehicle, but really like a statement of making the impossible possible. And around that brand, we then see that we can evolve the company into other segments, including the VTOL segment. But that we see actually much further down the line, at the time when all these barriers to entry, like infrastructure, battery energy density, regulation, once all these are much more progressed and more readily available, then we believe we will have a strong brand within this general segment and can actually extend the product offering. But until then, we will focus very much on the flying car as we do it.
Mira, I'd be interested in your point of view on investments in the entire air mobility segment. You know, not only around the vehicle and the product, and I would like to, you know, maybe get a point of view on software platforms, as Patrick mentioned, investments in infrastructure, et cetera, to bring this reality to life, be it 15 years from now, 20 years from now, whatever the time horizon might be. When you look at the investor community, what is the appetite, the wherewithal, if you will, from investors to make bets in air mobility?
Well, it depends on what type of investment. There are a lot of people now looking at the possibility to invest or use existing parking lots and parking buildings, using the roof for all these air taxis that are expected to be available in a few years. There are a lot of infrastructure about electrification of those, because these are all going to be electric VTOL equipment. So that's one side, let's call it infrastructure. Then there is a major world to be invested in the technology and the platforms and actually the cars. And so you see the larger companies today, I can even say, not only car makers like Hyundai, and not only technology leaders like Google, investing in some type of air mobility, because everybody believes that at the end of the day, because the congestion today exists in cities, and because it is complicated to get to the airport, to park, to get through customs or immigration, get on a plane, wait for your pilot to take off, land, look for a taxi, get to your destination, to do it in an easier way, especially when major airports are becoming further and further away from cities, and you want to bridge on that gap. Of course, AeroMobile is not in that space. AeroMobile is in a personal air mobility, and actually a luxurious way of fly and drive, or drive and fly. Typically, if you look at fly-in communities that you have quite a few in the U.S., especially along the water, East Coast, West Coast, you see that there they are investing in fly-in communities and a runway. Everybody has his own 1, 2, 5 planes. You know, many of them are plane collectors. So I think that this whole industry opens up to lots of types of investments. Many of them I did not even mention, because I cannot even imagine what this will entail. But, you know, easy to look at some of the reports that recently were made by all consulting firms and visionaries about where it's going to. So I always remind myself, you know, the first flying machine was drawn by Leonardo da Vinci in 1473. And since then, a lot of imagination around flying. And the combination of flying and car, as Henry Ford said, will happen. It's now happening with us.
I'd like to maybe close with some advice for our listeners. Patrick, it occurs to me that what you and your team have been successful in doing is navigating regulation, and I would say some heavy regulation, in two industries, air and ground-based transportation. You mentioned a little bit on how you navigated that earlier in the conversation, but I'm curious. You know, our listeners represent OEMs and suppliers and so forth. You know, as they continue to navigate and drive towards electrified and autonomous and shared, and who knows if air is in the future or not, any advice that you might be able to provide from a regulatory perspective on how to navigate those complexities, not only in a given country, but it gets even more complex when you're talking about products that have to operate in different jurisdictions around the world. Any parting advice for our listeners?
General advice is, whenever you have new legislation that is necessary for your product to be brought to the market or to be developed, it's always very risky both because of the content of the regulation and as well the timeline that is associated to that. So it actually can literally completely, obviously, impact the whole industry and shift the whole industry backwards by, you know, X number of years, which can also lead potentially to disillusionment of investors who say, oh, we expected this to come out in 5 or 7 years, but now it's actually 12 or 15 years. So working in unknown regulatory environment is basically just very risky. And that's, I mean, more for maybe for from the investment point of view. Obviously, then groups come together and lobby with the regulators, and that's what's happening at the moment with the VTOL industry, and that's just right and good. Obviously, demonstrating if the capabilities and the benefits of and also the safety features of the developments. But still, again, it's uncertain. And what we have done or been able to achieve with Aeromobile was that, I mean, when we started, we were not sure, and we thought actually we would need a new regulation for a flying car. And we were very concerned about that because of the risk that I mentioned. And it turns out that we were able to convince the regulators that we do not need a new regulation, but actually we can certify the car as a car. You know, there's requirements as how a car, what a car needs to satisfy from the crash structure, obviously, which is one of the key, I would say, requirements. And also we can certify it as a plane, and the aerospace regulators don't care that, in fact, they find it positive that we have additional safety features in the vehicle, such as a carbon fiber monocoque, which is a safety cell, and obviously protecting the pilots and the passengers in case of crash, which is an extended additional safety feature compared to a small aircraft. So we were, I would say, lucky in the sense that we were able to, or we are able to use existing regulation rather than hoping for the new type of regulation to come out.
Gentlemen, thank you. Fascinating discussion. I appreciate you joining me today on Daily Drive.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
That's Daily Drive for Friday, September 11th. For breaking news, go to autonews.com. And to catch up on all of our episodes, go to autonews.com/Daily Drive. We'll be back on Monday. Thanks for listening, and have a terrific weekend. And now, some words from our sponsor.
In today's automotive market, maximizing existing profit centers and creating new ones is more than a savvy move. It's the biggest factor in getting the most out of every customer opportunity. What would it mean to improve your profit performance in every area of your dealership? More customer pay ROs. More finance growth from new and used vehicles. Fewer write-offs in service. Reduced time required to complete a deal. The key to all of that, and more, is giving your employees the freedom to drive revenue. Time they spend focused on manual processes is time that can, and should, be used in more profitable ways. When this happens, processes are redefined, employees are empowered, and attention can be turned back to the customer. It all adds up to your dealership becoming the best version of itself. The big question is, how much more do you stand to make? How would a 44.3% increase in service department gross affect you? What about a 25.7% increase in combined gross per new vehicle sold? Those aren't theoretical figures. They are real key performance indicators from a 3-year study of dealerships who gave their employees that freedom to do more with their time. With the right tools behind your revenue drivers, you'll see improved profit performance too. To see more key performance indicators from real dealerships like yours, visit rayray.com/KPI and read the full Impact on Profitability report. That's reyrey.com/KPI.